Listen, I want to issue a warning. You can't, like, casually stroll into a 24-hour sexual odyssey, even in New York. You kind of have to know people. Like, honestly, if you just up and try, the best outcome is that you inadvertently cause the death of two acquaintances. And it's probably not even going to go that well for you. Sadly, question mark, the real world isn't quite as horny as Eyes Wide Shut, which was the number one movie in America for Christmas. A Christmas movie.
The number one movie in America. Number one movie in America.
Whoa, number one.
The number one movie in America.
Number one.
The number one movie in America.
Oh, whoa, number one.
The number one movie in America.
Number one.
The number one movie in America.
Number one.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. It's the number one movie in America. Here are two people who probably aren't getting paid enough to dig Indiana Jones this hole. It's Robin Hitchcock.
That's accurate. Yeah.
And Camila Adams.
Yeah, that's about right.
Because they have their nice digging song, but I'm like, I don't know how well this gig pays.
They should unionize.
They should. Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark was last time. 88 and a quarter. There have been so many shakeups to the top 10, so let's do it one more time. 10th place, Ocean's 11 at 87. 9th place, Speed, 87 and two-thirds. 8th place, Ghost, 88.
Wild.
Ghost, good movie.
It is a good movie.
7th place, Pulp Fiction, also 88, wins a tiebreaker. 6th, Raiders of the Lost Ark, that's where it's going to fall. 6th place, 88 and a quarter. 5th place, just barely, statistically better, 88 and a third. Men in Black, here we are to tell you that Men in Black is better than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yep.
We loved it. 4th, Alien, 89 and a half. 3rd, Silence of the Lambs, 91 and a third. 2nd, Fight Club, 92 and a third. And 1st, Get Out at 95.
Right on.
Apologies.
We've watched a lot of good movies.
Yeah, that's a lot of, particularly this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for us.
Tony's taking it,
Tony.
Taking it not light on us. Sorry to Purple Rain, now out of the top 10. Mm. Although Morris Day and the Time will be here.
This is what it feels
this
like
weekend.
When doves cry.
It does. Next time we get a score above 87, Ocean's 11th. No, I skipped several words in that sentence. Next time we get a score above 87, Ocean's 11 will be in Ocean's 11th. That's what I was.
That's fun.
Like when 7 was 7th, but that's a while ago now. So.
Not going to be this one.
Okay.
I love it.
I kind of love it.
I love this movie.
Okay.
Like,
it's Eyes Wide Shut.
So
everybody.
Deeply flawed. Like, there are such serious problems with this movie, and yet I'm like, yes.
I just don't. How do you enjoyably watch this movie?
Okay, here's my overarching theory of this film. Often it is compared to a dream. Right?
I have that in there. Is this a fever dream?
Yes, exactly. But to me, it is the opposite of a dream. Dreams are very boring when you recount them, which happens for 6 minutes in this movie.
Right.
Talking about deep flaws. They are amazing in the moment. I actually think this movie is the reverse. Watching it is kind of like, okay, this is long. This is weird. What's happening? And then the next day, you're like, that was fucking brilliant. And when I say you, I mean me.
No, I mean, listen, it's The Shining 2.
Okay.
Let's
get into this one.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure I agree.
Here's this fatally flawed couple with their marriage on the ropes, and then some weird shit with a maybe spooky party is going to happen. Nicole Kidman's dream scene is a mirror of Jack Nicholson's recounting a dream scene. Mm-hmm. And she has a pose later on where she literally is doing Wendy's holding the cigarette pose. There's so many little echoes of The Shining. And it's a story about a marriage falling apart with a big place where weird shit's going down. It's a mirror companion to The Shining, which is my favorite movie, so I love it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. My take on it and all was that... He couldn't handle the fact that his wife was horny for some other dude at some point. Like, everything was cool with him until she's like, you know what? Remember, like, 12 fucking years ago, whenever it was, like, this random dude that I thought that I probably could have fucked, but I didn't and didn't do anything else. And that just, like, turns him on his head, and that just sends him on this whole path of, like, these torrid and crazy events. And what I would have loved, what would have really boosted it up for me, this whole movie, is if at the end she was like, there was never a naval officer.
Dude, I was high.
I was lying my ass off.
And just made some shit up and rolled with it. And then you left for a day, so I couldn't be like, yeah.
It's also very weird to refer to someone as a naval officer.
Right.
Just say a fucking sailor.
Right. Exactly. Because I spent probably like a good 7 minutes like, what naval officer is that? What makes him a naval officer?
He had the little things on his breast. He had the little rows of squares. That's, and you're so like, specific. Oh, he's an officer. I don't know.
Camila, did you retweet this into my feed? Because, like, very randomly, an old tweet that says, Eyes Wide Shut is like, oh shit, my wife is a person, and it fucking destroys Tom Cruise.
No, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's from Justine Perez Smith on Twitter. And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what this movie is.
It's. I love this movie, but here's where I think you're right. The first 40 to 90 minutes of this movie, I don't know, time is weird in this movie. they're at the party and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be about how they're a hot couple that almost fucks around and then fucks each other. That this is how they get their jollies. They go like walk up to the line and then go back and go home together. So then why is he so, you were flirting with the two.
Right.
With two whole women.
And you probably saw her with him. And so like you get it. And then you're like, what? What? You thought seriously about a strap? Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, that's what I assumed too, is that this is going to be like, oh, they're one of those couples.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, all right, sure. And at that point, I was like, but then it went nowhere. I was like, oh, okay. And I'm still just kind of waiting. Like, this movie was kind of the equivalent of, like, Blue Balls for me.
It's like, for Tom, too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, one thing about this movie is that, like, it's not sexy.
No.
Like, at all. Like, I think Nicole Kidman is incredibly sexy in it. Like, there are multiple scenes where she is mostly naked where I'm like, I like looking at her body. Mm. But it makes sex seem really unpleasant.
Like,
yeah. And, like, not to kink shame anyone. Right, no, like, if that's your thing, okay.
I just don't know if Kubrick was the right one to pull off all this sex. You know, like, in, like, to direct.
Yes. I read the oral history on Vulture of the orgy scene.
Oh, wow.
And they talk about how, I can't remember, they were filming it for 7 years, right?
Yeah.
And they talk about how as the filming progressed, he kept changing his mind about what it should be and how explicit it should be. Mm-hmm. And it just got increasingly explicit. And they kept losing performers because he didn't want to hire porn stars. He wanted to hire models, and he was also very important to him that they not have breast implants.
Okay.
Because why? I don't know. Anyway,
sorry, you're painting yourself into a corner there. Because we pan all the way around that, and there's not a small boob to be found, yet you didn't want...
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. And so anyway, he kept being like, all right, so now you're going to have sex on this piece of human furniture, and they'd be like, I'm out.
Stanley, this is a small country. We have 42 models on this entire island. We can't keep. If you saw Eyes Wide Shut when it came out, or maybe one point a long time ago, it's likely that all you remember is boobs, masks, and a weird costume shop. So to fill in the gaps, to be fair, that's 90% of the movie. But to fill in the rest, Robin is going to try to distill this sexual odyssey into 60 seconds.
All right.
Ready, go.
Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman are married rich people who go to Sidney Pollack's house for a big party. Tom flirts with two models. Nicole flirts with a dashing older gentleman. Tom is whisked away to handle a naked lady's overdose. Back home, they get stoned, and Nicole confronts him about his flirting, and she shares that she fantasizes about a naval officer. Tom decides to have a dark night of the soul about it. He almost hires a young sex worker and then visits his old buddy Nick Nightingale. Nick tells him about playing piano at a spooky orgy. Tom rents a costume from Radha Serbegia and heads to the orgy, which is probably the only thing you know or remember about this film. A naked lady tells Tom he's in danger. He's unmasked. "You're in danger," lady says she'll accept the punishment for him. The next day, he retraces his steps, is reminded that sex can be a real bummer, what with HIV and child rape. He becomes increasingly paranoid when he finds out that the lady from the beginning of the movie died, and Alan Cumming tells him Nick got beat up. Sydney tells him he saw him at the orgy, he should stop being so paranoid, but also wise up. He goes home and cries, and then the next morning, Nicole tells him they need to fuck.
54 seconds.
Woo! That was a lot.
Yeah.
And I had to correct my pronunciation of Radha Serbegia.
Yeah.
he compressed like a decade of Stanley Kubrick's life into 54 seconds. So many details to seize on. Let's get this out of the way. Is Nick alive and the overdose was coincidental?
I completely and fully believe that Nick is alive and the overdose was coincidental. When you said in the teaser, kill two of your acquaintances, I was like, what?
Yeah. I could go either way, but maybe it's my, like, the world is much less complicated than you'd like to think it is, mm-hmm. philosophy, but it's like, I think these people are rich, bored people acting like a secret society.
Precisely.
I right. don't think they're actually powerful. And
I mean, I think they're rich and powerful, but I don't think that they murder people.
Yeah, I think that this, you know, this girl initiated a new, darker stage of their sex ritual
mm-hmm.
by being like, I'll take the punishment. And I think Nick got punched because he was kind of a dip about it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yes. Well,
he gave out the password. I mean, he was yeah. not authorized to do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't really give it out. He just wasn't very cautious about it.
Did he write it on the...
Yeah, but he wasn't like, here you go. He was just like writing it down for his own memory, I thought. And Tom peeked over and was like, okay,
and
I'm not 100% sure on that.
I don't know.
I have another question. I'm sorry to cut you off. The lady at the beginning and You're in Danger lady, do we even know if they're the same lady?
That's what I was wondering. They're the same?
Yeah. The girl who
OD'd
is also the, yeah.
Okay. So, and also where you're saying that they're rich and powerful, but they don't kill people. I think that is echoed in the fact that of how dude handled her overdose.
He was
concerned, but I'm sure it was more for like his own personal reasons, but also like he didn't want a dead body in his house, but whatever. So yeah, like if they were just killing folks for coming to the orgy unannounced and uninvited, I don't think he would have cared as much to let her not OD.
A really good point.
Yeah. I think, I mean, eat the rich all day long. That's fine. Like, I think a lot of people think the Masons still can run things. I'm like, I think they hang out at a club and maybe push some money around.
Mm.
I don't think that, like, if you piss off the Masons, you're going to end up in a box in Lake Huron.
I will say that when my great aunt passed and we were going through her house, her dead husband,
her dead husband?
The man who made a widow of her.
He was a Mason and mm-hmm. we found his and they have like, I might have to edit this out because I'm afraid the Masons will come for me.
When you remember that Kramer is like a level 500 Mason, like Kramer, Michael Richards is one of the top Masons. It's like, okay, you can't have that much going on.
Okay.
Sorry,
so
Masons.
Much to cover.
Listen, Masons, if you need fresh blood and you come up to me like you want to be a Mason, I'll be like, okay, I'm not going to show up that often.
I am not paranoid about you.
Yeah. Eyes Wide Shut was released July 16th, 1999, the 20th number one movie of the year. Yeah, it is weird that this is a summer number one movie. The preceding winners were Big Daddy, Wild Wild West, and American Pie.
Hmm.
Then this, then the remake of The Haunting and Runaway Bride. It's a little bit of an outlier as a nomia, but I'm glad it's here. Won that first weekend with $21.7 million. American Pie's second weekend was in second. The debuting Lake Placid was in third with $10.9 million. Lost the following weekend, actually fell to fourth behind The Haunting, fellow debut Inspector Gadget.
Filmed in Pittsburgh.
Yes, that's one of the early in the wave of Pittsburgh filming.
Mm-hmm.
Also fell back below American Pie. It did okay, though. It made $55.6 million. It is the 42nd top-grossing film of a very busy year, 1999. It made more money than things you thought it would not have, like Never Been Kissed, Varsity Blues, the South Park movie. All of those didn't do as well as Eyes Wide Shut. Also, our old friend Stigmata did not do quite as well as Eyes Wide Shut.
The rest of those have masked orgy scenes?
Yeah.
South Park, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Varsity Blues had a strip club scene. I believe I was 14. I remember. Inflation kind of screws up trying to figure out what the most successful Stanley Kubrick movie is. They're from a 45-year span. Most of them end up around the same range. In unadjusted money, this is the second top-grossing Stanley Kubrick movie after 2001, A Space Odyssey. Easily his best worldwide. It made over $100 million globally. It was a pretty big hit in random places, like not in Europe. But in
which I would expect it to be a big hit in Europe. It's very European.
It has one all-time record, though. The longest continuous film shoot. Eyes Wide Shut is in the Guinness Book of World Records as the longest shoot on record at no fewer than 400 days of filming.
Yeah.
Why? Well, I guess what you
He takes every shot 48 times. Like, there's some shot of Tom Cruise walking through a door that Tom Cruise did 82 times.
It's the in the orgy scene, though. This
it's
is
an
also,
important walking through
also,
a door.
Wait, can we talk about the other thing I learned from the Vulture Oil history? You're in danger, lady. Voice of Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, this is wild. I guess the actual naked lady, they just didn't like her voice. So they were like, oh, we should dub this with somebody. Somebody said, oh, get Kate Blanchett. She's around.
What?
And maybe it was a credit thing. Somebody was doing someone a favor. Like, it had to be a secret, and it remained a secret for 20 years. And in 2019, it was like, by the way, all of those words are being said by Kate Blanchett, uncredited.
Wow.
The other wild thing, that wasn't New York. He didn't fly by that point in his life.
That is wild. I feel like that is the soundstagiest soundstage in a movie made in the latter half of the 20th
century. I swear, there was at one point when Tom is walking down the street or whatever, I'm like, this looks like I've seen this in another movie, like this entire street.
You probably have, yeah.
So, okay. Yeah.
But I like that choice. I understand that the lore is that he just refused to fly, but I feel it contributes to the dreamlike nature of the movie.
Sure. And helps him control every aspect of everything.
Yes.
When you don't have real businesses and residents to worry about. Hey, he showed a final cut to a few people, including Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, and died 6 days later.
I love that. I'm sorry. He probably had more work in him. I'm sad that Stanley
Kubrick.
Like,
I'm done.
But yes, I love the trope of the guy having a huge fight and winning the fight and then walking three steps and falling down. That's what he did artistically.
There is a debate over how much it was done and how happy Kubrick was with it.
That's fucking stupid.
Most people say it was all but the details were complete.
He would not have showed it to Tom and Nicole.
No.
If it weren't, in his mind, 99% finished.
And for some reason, Arlie, I never decide if it's Ermy or Emery.
I have no idea.
You know him.
Yeah.
He says that he had a conversation with Stanley Kubrick where Stanley Kubrick was like, oh, this movie's terrible. They're going to kill me for it. And everyone else said that never happened. So who knows?
Yeah.
Most people think he was happy with it and he was mostly done with it. There was still post-production going on. Sidney Pollack just did that. He's like, hey, I'm around and a director.
That's what happens when you cast your director buddies in the movie. I guess this was before Todd Field was a director.
Yeah.
Todd Field plays Nick Nightingale. And
Still weird.
Mm-hmm. Also, do you know when I sent you that the gum you invented is coming back in style joke? Did you get that joke?
I don't get it.
Okay. He invented Big League Chew.
Tom Field?
Todd Field invented Big League Chew.
How old is he?
Like our age. Yeah.
Todd Field invented Big League Chew, was an actor for a while, and then was a director of
three movies, all of which have been.
Was he 10 when he invented Big League Chew? Because that was around in the 60s, wasn't it?
No, 70s? Apparently not.
I need to learn more about Big League Chew before we go on.
Also, he must be older than me because I was. How does math work? How old was I in 1999? 14.
Created by Portland Mavericks left-handed pitcher Rob Nelson and Batboy and future filmmaker Todd Field.
Wow.
Then pitched to the Wrigley Company in 1980. It's only from 1980.
Wow. Man, wow. This guy.
Yep, anyway.
Almost makes me like Tar, not enough. why wasn't this an NC-17? Because when it was released, there were a bunch of digitally added extra people at the orgy standing in front of the naughty bits. This was kind of the plan. Like, Stanley did what he wanted. People were like, he never would. Even Ebert was like, he never would have approved of this. No, it was actually his idea. Because he knew he was contractually obligated to deliver an R. So he was like, we're gonna do what we want, and then you can edit in however many extra people it takes to get this an R. So if
he probably knew, I'll release the real version later.
So if you saw this on, did we all watch it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was the version you did not see in theaters, which would have got an NC-17 rating.
The reason that I went to this Vulture thing is because I had a memory, which I believe is false. I could find no verification of this on the internet, that the G-strings in the circle of naked people, like around the incense guy, were digitally added. That was meant to be a circle of full frontal nudity. That is a fake memory of mine.
Well, there's two remarkably casual full frontal nudity ladies like 3 minutes later.
Exactly.
So you were probably conflating.
Yeah, but there is a lot. There's a big difference between there's some ladies having sex on a table and here's a big old ring of vaginas for like 8 minutes.
That's true.
Yeah.
And that's probably not the sentence you thought you'd hear in the Christmas episode. That said, this is a Christmas movie.
Sure is.
There's lights and trees everywhere.
They
go Christmas shopping. We start at one Christmas party and go to a different Christmas party. But like, this is closer than this is closer than Iron Man 3. This is not the least Christmassy Christmas movie we've done.
It's not.
Yeah. I love the fairy lights everywhere. Why did I just say fairy lights? That's what they call them in the UK. Christmas lights everywhere.
Where do you find out what they call cigarettes? Hey.
Yeah, it's like the candles in Barry Lyndon of this movie.
I've never seen Barry Lyndon.
It's not very good.
I thought wasn't that in Sight and Sound? Wasn't that in this bizarre Sight and Sound poll? Isn't that lauded? Okay.
People like how pretty it looks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I obviously am a Kubrick acolyte, but I think that makes me more friendly to this. I mean, maybe. You, Camila?
Kubrick? I don't think I am. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't see anything because Kubrick did it, or I haven't. He's not the driving force behind it, and I also don't, you know, shy away from it either, because so I don't really care. I don't think that the actors in this film, I don't think he got the best out of them. Like, there are a lot of performances that I would just kind of really felt just like were forced. They felt really forced. Like, Tom and Nicole were married at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know how well it was going.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, Tom is always Tom, unless it's Tropic Thunder. And but Nicole, I don't know if maybe it's just, you know, age and time and experience, but I've seen her do much better.
Oh, absolutely.
And
her drunk acting is something.
Yeah. Both of them have never been in a room with somebody smoking marijuana.
Right. Yeah. Like, and I'm like, what is this? What is this teetering? What's happening? Yeah. And just even them. And then what's the guy's name with the daughter? The guy who owns the store, the costume shop.
Radha Sherbedjia.
Yeah. Like that guy. Like I love him.
Yeah.
He's an excellent, Law and Order perp as well as, you know, he's in Snatched.
Yeah. But third favorite actor of the Theronathon crew.
that scene is that
gross.
I don't. That's like, I'm not willing to think about this enough to decide why it bothers me. So let's just say it does. Like,
because it kind of plays this teenager getting raped for laughs.
Yeah.
His child prostitution, because obviously the arrangement they came to was money related. And
right, that's what I meant.
Pimping out his daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird because, yeah, that is the, like, and now we have the comic relief.
I don't know. And I'm like, why it's there to be, you know.
Couldn't this just have been a weird costume shop? Like, that was already compelling.
Yeah.
Or don't. I think it makes sense. Like I said in my recap.
What's her name? Lili Sulabuski? Mm.
Baby Helen Hunt. Like I said in my recap, I do think thematically it works that he realizes that this guy has prostituted out his daughter.
Yeah.
As like, oh, wow, sex has negative consequences, right?
Yeah.
Like, the sex worker is HIV positive. He finds out that this guy is letting his daughter get raped. Mm-hmm. And, like, that is bleak, but also reality,
yeah.
Right? So I think that it makes sense
the literal harsh light of day on
yes.
me.
Yeah.
Is that the point of this movie? Is that we're just exploring the different hills and valleys, so to speak, of sex?
Yes.
And
like,
that's
yeah.
That okay. But why? I'm just like an hour in. I'm like, what the fuck is this movie? What am I watching?
And you're gonna keep watching it for another 2 hours.
I was at one point. I'm like, is there a double time like, thing?
When you listen to a podcast fast?
Yes.
The other scene, I'm like, why are we here? When he goes to find his patient is dead and his daughter, and then his daughter kisses him.
Oh, my least favorite part of the movie.
And Greg, yeah. Greg of Dharma and Greg shows up.
That's what he's for. I remember him from Criminal Minds.
sure.
Oh.
I forgot about that.
Are they supposed to be like store brand Tom and Nicole? Like,
ooh, interesting thought,
right? Because
like they're kind of like shaped the same way with the hair and the glasses mm-hmm. and the thing, but they're just a little bit more earthly,
normal.
Yeah,
normal. It's yeah, because it maybe because my confusion is just like why I thought it might be a whole fever dream is the fact that Tom is getting pussy thrown at him left and right.
He
like
in the course Tom of Cruise.
He's not Tom Cruise in the movie, and he's also and even like if
yeah,
he was,
he's a doctor that looks like Tom yeah. Cruise. And look presumably is more sane.
What? Like seriously, this guy is like literally like seriously. Like, okay, so Robin, he's yeah. not Tom Cruise. He's Joe.
I don't know.
Leibowitz. And,
and he's like 5'3".
And he rolls
he's a
up
short
to you.
King.
and he rolls
yeah.
up.
Like,
really?
Listen, late 90s Tom Cruise, extremely handsome man.
I want to punch him every time he smiles.
Yeah. Well,
like, I mean, I understand he's handsome, but I just want to punch him every time he smiles.
My theory is that Tom Cruise fixing his teeth made him stop being handsome. This is why I don't fix my teeth. The real reason I don't fix my teeth
is
money.
What was wrong with this? Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah. And The Outsiders, what his teeth used to look like.
No. He didn't fix it. I mean, he didn't fix his teeth all the way until the aughts. After they got divorced, he got braces.
I don't yeah. remember.
And stopped being handsome.
Did they just? Did he just not do like a bunch of like full frontal tooth?
No.
Shots,
yeah. I mean, he's rich enough to just buy a straight up new set of teeth.
Right. Yeah. Huh. I don't recall I don't blatantly recall him having crooked teeth only in The Outsiders.
Okay.
That's the only time.
He probably had two rounds of braces. Okay, I had braces back in the day. I've got fucking crooked teeth. So, yeah. Anyway.
I'd like to nominate this for best original just plunking on the keys for a while.
Oh, my God.
I also started laughing out loud during the orgy scene when I was like imagining Nick Nightingale playing that music.
Blindfolded.
Yeah. And just being like, oh, shit's going down. Ding.
And finally for me, I don't want to cut anybody off. Was Tom Cruise occasionally trying to act like Jack Nicholson, or is that just what Stanley Kubrick directs people to
maybe.
Do?
What
when it was all of the little
are you thinking of?
Whenever he would get angry, he would do like, you're saying that I'm going to the thing, and I'm like, is that just what he asks of people? It's
or maybe Tom thought that's what he wanted.
Yeah,
this is what you like, right? I don't know. The whole thing is an acting exercise. I mean, if you cut out all of the weird, we are in an acting class from this, it'd be an hour and 45 minutes long. Because every line is like, do you have to go? Do I have to go? I have to go. It's like, yeah, I had...
We're all leaving.
Classes in college, too. All of that said, I like it a lot. Because it's this funhouse mirror shining, and it's weird and spooky. And
you found it spooky?
Yeah.
Those fucking masks. Dislike.
It's like this idea that there's this secret weirdness around every corner and behind every door and all throughout the city. There's bizarre things that you don't understand and you could get in over your head really quickly. I think that's a spooky idea.
I agree.
I mean, yeah, that's a spooky idea, but I didn't see any of that conveyed in this movie.
Speaking of secret societies, or not so secret, I guess, the rumor when we were asking, like, how happy were they in their marriage, the rumor is this was the best time ever in their marriage. And he was pulling away from Scientology because he was locked away in the UK doing millions of takes.
Interesting.
And the Scientology guy, like, was calling him and he wasn't answering his calls. And so that's when they upped the whole Nicole is a suppressive person thing and, you know, pulled him back in once the shoot was over, and that was the end of their marriage.
I kind of feel like in watching this and knowing that they were married at the time, it feels like, you know, in the very, you know, intelligent words of Joey Tribbiani, when they're doing it off stage, there's no chemistry on stage.
Yeah.
Well, there was one other movie that these two were in together. What was that?
Days
Far and Away?
Oh, so there's two other movies they were in
together. They were in Days of Thunder. She was in Days of Thunder?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Huh. I haven't seen these movies since I was a kid.
Yeah, and so was Far and Away. I never saw it, but I hear that it's pretty hot and heavy. Were they is that where they met, or is that?
I would have said that they met on Days of Thunder, but now I'm not 100% sure that they're both in it.
I mean, I'm not going back to Days of Thunder, and yet I watch Talladega Nights all the time. Who's to say? Hold. It feels like we should know this.
Yeah.
Yes, Nicole Kidman is in Days of Thunder.
Interesting. I did not know that.
She is the second one listed, in fact.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, what a cast. I gotta watch Days of Thunder. Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, Robert Duvall, Randy Quaid, Cary Elwes, Michael Rooker, John C. Reilly.
What?
We gotta watch this movie.
Holy cow.
Is it on the list?
Probably.
All right. Anyway, Days of Thunder, everybody. An hour shorter than Eyes Wide Shut. But you know what is short is this trailer.
I have seen one or two things in my life, but never, never anything like this.
It's lies. This trailer makes this movie look sexy.
Can we have a fucking clue, Stanley?
Right, yes. Like, what? Something. Give me something. I had no idea. I was like, and still I walk away like, okay.
I mean, it's a real come to this movie to see Nicole's nipples.
Yeah. The song's great. Good.
It's been stuck in my head for 3 days.
I know he was being really secretive about what this movie was about, but I was like, why did you have to this time?
Yeah.
Like, that's not like, you didn't have like an ace up your sleeve. It was just a different kind of slow drama than maybe you would have guessed.
Right.
Also, how secretive can you be about a movie based on a book?
Oh, I didn't know that. It was based on a book.
Yeah, he owned the rights for like 30 years. Like, he bought the rights to this novella. This
was it
German
the same
novella.
Of the same name?
It no.
Trom Novel.
Which I think means dream novel. Yeah.
Okay, so nobody. Yeah, we didn't know.
Yeah.
In the US, we had no idea.
And my letterbox list is She Had Sex With What? A collection of movies where someone has sex with something unexpected.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what?
I assume
with something unexpected.
I assume a room full of masked men with other masked men serving as human tables.
I would call that whom.
Yeah, it's like what I'm thinking.
Peaches.
Yeah, the dude in the cherry pie.
Call Me By Your Name was on the list. Tan was on the list.
Okay,
but, you know, I thought it worked.
It was just one peach.
Just the one. I don't care. 90. Everybody, shut up. I give it a 90.
I'm almost there. Yeah. I'm at 87, and I considered going into the 90s. I do genuinely, I really, really like this movie.
I like thinking about this movie.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think if you watch this a lot, there you'd find a lot to unpack, and you'd like it more each time.
I tried to unpack it. I watched it a couple days ago, and I tried, and I didn't find anything sexy about any of it.
It's not sexy.
No, it's not really
nothing,
sexy.
Nothing at all. 20.
Wow!
Here's why you're a wild card. Because you can sometimes you're like, eh, 70. And sometimes you're like, four. Like, we don't know. We don't know until the number comes out.
I know. And it's like, you know, in those instances, when it's like a 70, like I can still appreciate some aspect of the movie, but there is nothing, like not even the technical aspect of the filmmaking or like the directing, none of it.
I love the super saturated colors.
Maybe my TV was off or something like that, because it seemed like washed over to me. Like that, it didn't seem saturated at all. And also, like, I watched the second half on my laptop because I had to stop. I was like, I'm not going to make it.
I need to put myself in work mode.
Right.
I do think we went to dinner in the middle. Where did we go? Like, we definitely watched half of it, and then we're like, we'll be back in a little bit. It is a long one.
I put it on after Colin went to bed, and I was like, I'll watch it till I get sleepy, and then I watched the whole goddamn thing. I have a question for you, Camila. While you were watching this, were you like, oh, Sean and Robin will like this?
No.
Okay, actually. Interesting.
I thought Sean would. I wasn't sure about you.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned last week, I was like, I think I really like this game.
Just because there's 72 naked ladies doesn't mean I'm good. No, I know why you thought that. And you were right.
Yeah.
Is there still a bingo card? I lost mine.
There is a bingo card. I don't think we get there's anything
nothing,
again.
Yeah, there's nothing on here, which sucks.
You didn't have an orgy on it.
No, stupid.
Appears in relatively few number one movies. There are no Disneys or Star Warses or Marvels that.
And I keep thinking every last few movies. They feel like they should have had a train on them, but this is a different kind of. Was there a train?
No trains. Circles. No trains.
Absolutely no trains.
There's an orgy in Thor Ragnarok.
That's true.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Not the only one on the list. Well, that'll be our third season. Spooky, seasonal, orgy season. It's the early spring is when it happens.
Yes.
To Letterboxd, I'm going to go on a rant later, but I need to gear up for it. Robin?
When you say Letterboxd, you meant you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
As I was looking at Letterboxd, which I used to remember what I saw.
Okay.
Right. Letterboxd is a different segment. I said it already. No one liked the one I picked. You can't handle the truth. Robin, okay, what did you see?
I watched many, many things because, as I said in last episode, I was frustrated that I wasn't watching things and I had some time on my hands and knew I soon was not. So, are we allowed to talk about women talking?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Women Talking, awesome. Really liked it. Sean and I saw it on a busted projector. He leaned over to me and he was like, I think something's wrong with the projector. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure this is an artistic choice. And then as we're walking out, I'm like, it looked like a bruise because these women have been abused. And no, it was a busted
projector.
I had
a screener at home that I just popped in. I was like, no, it looks normal here.
Anyway, really, really liked it. I watched She Said, which I also really liked, but I am like the person on earth who is designed to really like She Said. So,
I mean, I feel like I'm going to enjoy it.
I'm excited to hear what you think about it. The thing that is weirdest and best about She Said, or not best, the thing that is so strange to me, they use Ashley Judd as Ashley Judd and Gwyneth Paltrow as Gwyneth Paltrow on the phone. Like, it's just, she did like a vocal cameo. And I feel like that is bizarre, but also worked better than when they had some lady pretend to be Rose McGowan and she sounded super weird.
I feel like you got to pick.
Yeah.
I feel like either everybody or nobody.
Well, I know from reading the book that they didn't really get along with Rose McGowan.
It doesn't seem like anybody does. But yeah, like if you've got two, then I would have, and oddly the other one, but also Trump and Weinstein. I mean, they had actual people twice. They had a person that didn't sound much like Rose McGowan saying Rose McGowan's words, and they had perfect voice impersonators be Trump and Weinstein to the point where I was like, is this like a recording they had of like it was
Colin
that
asked me
good.
The same thing. Yeah.
And so it's like, now I'm just thinking about these.
Yeah.
This is just a weird choice. That shouldn't take away from the movie. I liked the movie, but just kind of felt like you should have done a different thing than what Spotlight did. And won Best Picture with 4 years ago because it was very like.
I love Spotlight.
I love Spotlight too.
Yes, Spotlight too.
Yeah.
The other thing I really liked about it is they use their motherhood, interestingly. And this was invented for the movie. Like, they mention it very casually in the book. So Carey Mulligan's character had just had a baby and she's having postpartum depression. And at one point she's like, I think part of this is that she had a daughter and she's like, and all I can think about is how I've like put her in this world that hates women. And then also there's a scene with Zoe Kazan talking to her young preteen daughter, and she says, what are you writing about, mom? And she's like, bad stuff, I'll tell you when I'm older. And she's like, is it murder? No. Is it rape? How do you know that word? Right? And it's like, I don't know, I found those two scenes incredibly powerful. And I'm normally, as a non-parent, kind of like eye-rolly whenever movies about women are like, and their motherhood is their most important feature, or their lack of motherhood, right?
Right.
But it really worked for me. Okay, what else did I watch, Sean?
you sure watched the Banshees the Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh, speaking of teenage girls.
the plot of this movie.
The plot of this movie is mean girling.
Yeah.
Do we think Martin McDonagh knows that?
Does he have children?
I don't know. I don't really know anything about this guy.
He you know, grew up in small pubs in Ireland and probably eventually Dublin and London, so I don't
maybe
know.
He does, and he was just like, what if it was grown men?
That's exactly it. If this movie is saying, what if grown men treated each other like teenage girls treat each other, and the outcome is why, like, if that is the actual premise, this movie has a lot of interesting things to say about masculinity. If he is unaware that this is about teenage girls, I am much less on board. And I don't know how to resolve that other than, like, call him up.
Like, Martin, hey.
Yes.
Robin Hitchcock here.
I mean, it's similar to how I felt about Tar, where I was like, I need to know your intent before I'm on board.
I don't feel that way about Banshees of Inisherin. I do feel that way about Tar. But now, whenever I feel that way, I'm just like, so it didn't work. Because if I feel that way, you didn't do a good enough job making it clear.
I did at one point say that Colin Farrell's character is like if Sprink were a person, which for those people who do not know me, Sprink is my beautiful kitten, and that is a very high compliment.
For Colin or for Sprink?
Yes.
Were you devastated? That is the height of my emotional devastation this year.
I was going to say no. I was, maybe because I was a teenage girl and this did happen to me, minus the bit.
No spoilers.
Sorry. And, you know, maybe that should have made me more sad. I don't know. I was just like, yep. We'll talk about this later.
We'll talk about it when it's not spoilery. But watch it if you're not worried about how sad you'll get. Okay. Right?
I don't think everybody who watches this will get super sad.
Would you recommend it? That's what I can't figure out.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Talk about Fablemans, because that's going to push me in over the edge into my rant.
Listen, it's fine. I enjoyed it very much. I think it's very well done. I don't particularly care. I thought the kid was great. I think Michelle Williams is doing her best. I very much appreciated that at no point they formally diagnosed her, because in the first scene where she's laughing and being silly, I turned to Colin and I was like, she's going to be bipolar. And I was probably projecting, but regardless, I told him later, I was like, whenever a woman in a movie is not a sex object and she's laughing and being silly, she's going to be mentally ill. And he was sad. But they don't quite cross that bridge in this movie, and I'm thankful for it. It's fine. I think I gave it four stars on Letterboxd. Like, it is good.
I think I did too.
Like,
there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, there is nothing wrong with it.
Here's the thing. I'm so sick of all this Oscar shit. So apparently it takes 8 years from being overjoyed that you can now vote for a semi-major movie award to being so sick of this Oscar shit. Here's my problem. And it crystallized in realizing that Fablemans did not make any money and is not going to make any money, right? Fablemans has made like $5 million. Pearl made more than Fablemans. Ambi Los Angelesans made four times as much as the Fablemans. Bros and Strange World, each of which had 15 stories about how they were an unfathomable bomb, both made more money than the Fablemans. And what is bugging me now, and it's been growing for a couple of years, is any movie in this genre, whatever this genre is, we know it from as this had Oscar buzz movies,
yeah,
or prestige dramas or awards bait, whatever it is, mostly serious dramas that come out at the end of the year.
Movies for grown-ups.
Movies for grown-ups, excuse me. There will be 20 of those every single year, mm-hmm, that get multiple Oscar nominations.
Mm-hmm.
And every other conceivable genre, you have to be the best movie of the year.
Mm.
The best horror movie can break in. The best sci-fi movie can break in. The best gay movie. The best black movie. The best comedy. The best anything else in the world. If you're the very best, or maybe the second very best, we can talk about maybe you get an Oscar. But if you're the 14th best, middle-of-the-road prestige drama, you get 6 Oscar nominations. And in the case of a lot of these, The Fabelmans is showing with the box office because it's straightforward, right? It's a Steven Spielberg movie. It didn't go to streaming. It had every opportunity to make money and simply did not.
Mm-hmm.
Also, nobody gives a shit about these movies. And I'm not saying that the things that are the most popular should be awarded for doing the best. They already are with money. But I do think that a movie should land with someone on the earth. Right. And a lot of these movies simply do not, have no cultural impact or relevance because no one sees them and no one really cares about them.
No one can really relate to them.
So
I feel like no one right now.
you have a love for this genre, right, but
this is your thing. This is your Super Bowl.
Well, no, I
no,
love...
But I, part of the reason that the Oscars became my Super Bowl is because I love these kind of movies.
Oh.
I'm happy for you.
I mean, let's be real. I love almost all kinds
you
of
do.
Movies.
Right.
Yeah. And I would love it. I agree with what you're saying, where it's like the sort of tokenism that we get for other genres.
Yes.
I agree. It would be great if we could breach that barrier. I don't think a movie needs to be seen by a ton of people to be a worthwhile piece of art that's worth celebrating.
I don't, you're right. I wouldn't phrase it exactly like that. I do think that there has to be a point. Here's a better example is Armageddon Time. You and I both saw it. It is exactly in this genre. Nobody saw it. It has no point other than a director going, how did I get to be me? There's no point to this movie. And it still might get a couple Oscar nominations.
Right.
And there are five to... listen, I'm not talking about Parasite. I'm not talking about Moonlight. I'm not talking about even the good ones of... The five best ones of... I think Women Talking is good. I hope Women Talking gets Oscar nominations.
Me too.
I hope that... I don't know if I'd stretch it all the way to She Said because I feel kind of ambiguous about it, but something like Banshees of Inisherin, which is another one that almost nobody saw, still made more money than The Fabelmans, but I hope that gets some Oscar nominations. But I don't understand why so many of these are just whisked into a movie for the awards based on nothing, and why there are 40 of them every year when we're down to talking. There's some shit with Bill Nighy in it and there's like, well, he's gonna get an Oscar nomination for it. That's never come out, nobody's ever seen it, and I have no idea what it's about.
Yeah, neither do I.
Why is this the thing? Why do we talk about this? Mia Goth should be nominated for Best Actress for Pearl. She won't be. Not in a million years.
I wouldn't say not in a million years. It's a very strange feeling.
Is there something that's like, these are the checkout, this is what is allowed in to be considered as Oscar? Like what
yes,
are
and
the...
I read it cover to cover every year.
I mean, that list is like 400
it's
movies.
It's like 400
long. That's
movies.
Everything that was out, basically.
It has to be various right eligibility rules.
What are the eligibility rules aside from the time that it was...
Basically, they've played in theaters for a week this year.
Okay, played in theaters for a week
It has to play in a theater in Los Angeles County or in the borough of some borough in New York.
Okay, so what I'm saying, I don't understand like the process. So, they get this list of 400 movies, the people who are voting.
And then, like this stuff I handed you today, there are advertising and publicity campaigns that say, why don't you consider Armageddon Time when you're voting for your awards?
Okay.
And the studio, I mean, part of this is what studios push, right? Mm-hmm. Studios are choosing what to put their money and efforts behind, and buy a giant 2-page spread in the Hollywood Reporter every week to get you to vote for The Fabelmans. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a little corner that says, well, maybe you vote for Pearl and two. And the studios are at fault for what they're choosing to push.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. But I'm not questioning, like, really deciding what's the best art of the year. I'm questioning this period of the year where middling impact-free shit like Armageddon Time, I have to take seriously.
Now it seems to be there's a problem with who the studio is deciding to put money mm-hmm. behind, mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. one. Two, who makes up the bulk of these voters?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Two, three, and what they're willing to actually sit down and watch, or what their ones are like, oh yeah, I know my boy
yes.
Joe was mm-hmm. on this one. He, you know, so I'm gonna go ahead and vote for that one. So it's like, you know, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure. I know why it's happening.
I feel like no one. I want to push back on this, but I also want to spend some time with the spreadsheet before I push back on this. So,
I don't mean to attack you. I talk to you, and I have conversations about every one of these movies.
Yeah.
And I love having conversations right. about every one of these movies. But part of that is because I love when they suck and we're like, oh, this one sucks.
Yes, me too.
That's part of the fun. But it's I feel like it is time to, you know, stop this drift between, oh, here are the movies for the 1% of the population that still follows this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And over here, here's the movies for, you know, all the other people that are not. Is this Harvey Weinstein's fault? Speaking of, she said, was it before they started being like, have you considered the reader, that the best picture would be down to Braveheart and Babe? Like, was it more of a...
I want to spend some time with the spreadsheet yeah. before I answer that question.
Yeah.
My Oscars quest is to try to watch every major category nominee since 1970, and I have watched a lot of movies that are similar to the stuff you are talking about yeah. that comes out now. So I'm going to say it's not Harvey Weinstein's fault,
yeah.
but he might have exaggerated it.
Yeah.
I also would like to segue to talking about Bones and All, a movie that has Oscar buzz and yeah. is about fucking cannibals.
I don't know. I like that one. So I'm going to push it out of my...
Speaking of the watching something and being like, oh, Sean liked this. The whole movie, I was like, Sean loved this movie. And
give it a 9.
Yikes.
Definitely going to nominate the score.
I will say Taylor Russell. Is that her name?
Oh, yeah. She's
a fucking star. She needs a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I also liked being reminded of the existence of Waves. Speaking yes. of Oscar buzz.
I think I'm drawing the line at a movie I'm watching only because this is supposed to be good and I'm supposed to think seriously about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it feels like homework. Bones mm-hmm. and All doesn't feel like that because Luca Guadagnino is a director I like, and it might be weird. So it now I have a reason that I want to watch it.
Okay.
When we're talking about, I'm trying to think of something that's on my pile and I'm not going to get to The Sun, which I still don't even know what it is. There's no reason to watch that other than it's supposed to be good and I'm supposed to think about it seriously.
It's not supposed to be good. No, I don't think anyone likes that movie. People think...
I will continue to not watch it.
Yeah, well, Hugh Jackman might get nominated.
Mm.
And then you'll have to make decisions there. And so will I.
Yeah.
I do want to say about The Fablemans, it's way better than Armageddon Time.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That are the same movie.
Right.
It's like, oh, this is what happens when you're a real director.
Because Steven Spielberg made right. one of them. That's the thing. I might have gone to that if I were not me to see what Steven Spielberg was
right.
up to.
Yeah. And then the other thing about it that I'll say, which is both a plus and a minus, who the fuck cares about the guy who directed Ad Astra's Childhood, right?
Yeah.
Him and maybe his buddies care.
Yeah.
Everyone probably cares a little bit about mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg, one of the most famous directors of all time, how yeah. he learned to love the movies.
I'm not
Camila does not.
By the way, if you're in the room, Camila has receded into her phone, like, you two can go. Call me when...
Call me when I'm up.
Yeah.
And I do like The Fablemans. I mean, the relevant thing here is this is a movie directed by Steven Spielberg that had marketing, that had a push, that was in mm-hmm. all of the theaters, and no one stopped. So I'm wondering if post-pandemic, because the main demographic for this is older people,
yeah.
is people 35 to 60 mm-hmm. who like movies a lot,
yeah.
which overlaps with the people who are most COVID-averse.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of these just aren't making money yeah. anymore. So is it time that we're like, okay, we can start thinking about whether or not Top Gun Maverick was a serious, you know.
Right.
Is that going to push these worlds back together in an interesting way?
I have no idea. I also wanted to say one thing I did enjoy about The Fablemans is that it kind of was like playing the hits a little bit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was learning to love movies, I remember reading about Steven Spielberg. And I remember reading about him seeing The Greatest Show on Earth. and freaking out during the train scene. Mm-hmm. And I remember him talking about making movies with his friends and how they figured out that they could do the little flip board on the mm-hmm. dirt to make dirt fly up and look like there was shots firing into the ground. And I was like, he's doing the thing.
I do like the Fablemans. The Fablemans was my jumping off point.
Oh, and then also, I think it has some things to say about being Jewish in a town where no one else is Jewish,
yep.
which is not, like, they keep kind of mentioning Judaism in Armageddon Time and then right. not exploring it at all. And also, the dynamic between his parents is interesting.
Yes.
You're making me like the Fablemans more than I like the Fablemans.
How about that casting as John Ford?
I
two thumbs up.
Definitely didn't. When you made that teaser, I had like a list in my brain and it was not on that list.
Best moment of the film for me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Spoiler alert is too sad to bother with. Violent Night is fine if you want exactly what you think you're going to get from Violent Night.
Sweet.
And I watched Nanny. Nanny's great.
Right?
Yeah.
Good stuff.
That's
good
might crack my best director ballot.
Oh,
there.
Nice. Yeah. So, we've gotten to me now, yes. and like a soloist in a Baptist church, I'm going to take my time.
Yeah, please. Please.
I don't remember. Did I talk about the invitation last time?
I don't think so, no.
No.
Terrible. Did you see
you
that?
You saw it, right?
I kind of liked it.
Really? I did not. But I gave it like 1.5 stars.
Can you remind me what this movie is? Because I always think it's The Menu, and it's not.
I know, right? Yeah. The girl from Game of Thrones gets, like, she finds a missing or a long lost relative in England, and they're like hierarchy or something. They invite her over for a wedding. Turns out they're vampires.
Okay. I was going to say, what genre is this? It's that genre.
It's
okay.
That.
It's not great. I just like that. And the director tweeted back at me that I fully believe that in the first draft of that movie, it was just a romance for 1 hour and 10 minutes, and then it was like, whoops, vampires, and someone was like, you have to tease it at least a little bit, because the audience is going to get annoyed if they think that they're just watching a Hallmark romance about going to a thing, and then vampires, and that was my question for the director. I was like, did this start out as completely secret that it was a vampire movie? She's like, I will not confirm or deny that.
Oh, interesting, okay.
I just like that. I like that it takes so much time to get around. I'm like...
Like that Tarantino movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the From Dusk Till Dawn, yeah. which mm-hmm. every time a surprise, like, oh yes, vampires.
No, I was probably in a good mood. That's probably I was happy that night, and so I
but
liked
I,
it.
I like your take on it. Like, had it, you know, taken a little more, like mm-hmm. you know, just kind of then, you know, third act, like, oh shit,
yeah,
that would have. All right, another bad one. Mojave was like.
I also don't know what that is.
Two dudes meet up in the desert. One dude is like a rich, spiteful asshole who's like, I don't even know why he goes out to the desert, but he meets Oscar Isaac, who he manages to piss off while he's there. And then Oscar comes along and stalks him and, you know, comes back to retaliate after the fact. The script was bad. Like, Oscar and Walton Goggins is in it. Those dudes came to work.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, everybody else was like, I guess.
Oscar Isaac has a really good track record of being great in movies that I don't really like.
Right. Like, yeah. there's a great scene between him and I think the other dude's name is Garrett something. Very pretty boy.
Garrett Hedlund?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the confrontation scene when they're both in the... in a bar, and you know, they're both doing great, and the delivery of this shitty dialogue is great.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, these words are awful that you guys have to say, but you guys are doing your best.
Yeah.
Like, and for whatever reason, Mark Wahlberg is in it. Like, I'm assuming he was a producer, maybe, because he's pointless.
They agreed to do Wahlburgers for all of the craft services.
Christmas with You. Little Freddie Prinze Jr., Netflix Christmas, Amy Garcia, I think is her name.
Are you into that genre?
Not particularly. Okay. No, but around Christmas time, I go ahead and, like, you know, I give it a whirl.
Yeah.
Like, I try to do, like, a few of them here and there.
Hey, is this going to come out before we do the thing? Yeah. If you're in Pittsburgh.
That's right.
come to Arcade Comedy Theater on Friday, December 16th,
yes.
where both Camila and I will be on the panel for Bracket Night.
Holiday movies.
Deciding the best holiday movie.
Nice.
Should be a lot of fun.
I'm excited and nervous because the description is a panel of comedians, and it's like,
You're fine. You're gonna be okay.
But I'm not.
Yeah.
But yeah, Christmas with You is on Netflix, and it's Freddie Prinze Jr., and it's very cute. You know, if you just like holiday movies and you want to feel good, it's very cute. And I also love the fact that it's this is probably the first time I've ever seen Freddie Prinze actually take on a role with of his Latin heritage.
Oh, cool.
Which I always forget. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, that's right. And so it's very cute. I finally watched X.
My beloved X.
And is Pearl supposed to be a prequel to this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I haven't seen Pearl yet. X was good. I like the 70s feel to it and all that jazz.
We're just making each other feel bad around the circle. I felt made Robin feel bad, so now you made me feel bad.
It's not perfect.
It's okay.
I was just, are the old people young people in old makeup?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So
it's also Mia Goth. It's the same girl that's playing the lead.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I didn't think about it enough to like go actually research it, but I was very much distracted and aware of it as the movie was going. It was enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I probably would have liked it more had I actually watched it around Halloween, I think.
Sure.
It's just a mood thing. I don't have any problems with it other than that. Spirited.
What is this? Like, I've seen the poster and I'm like, okay, what are you? Are you a special? Are you a film?
It's a musical. It's another take of the Scrooge story.
Oh, Christmas Carol.
Yeah. But
how many do we
need? It's kind of cute. I like the way they do a little twist. They do enough changes to make it feel a little fresh.
Okay.
And what I don't like is I'm not really into musicals. And like, the musical thing just kind of like... I'm like, oh, fuck, when it started.
But that's how I felt when I saw Cyrano.
Was that a musical?
An example of the thing I am talking about.
So, but it's also, I mean, it's like Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds being Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds.
Wait, can they sing?
No.
Okay.
That's another thing. Like, Ryan is so fucking pitchy.
Oh my God, just hire people to dub them.
Right, yeah. Like, yeah.
Or hire people who could sing, let's be real.
Or we could have just, the dubbing it would have helped with the comedic aspect of it, I think.
Which, if they had done that, it would have ended up Hugh Jackman and James Corden, and you don't want that.
Okay, that's fair. But like, this drives me crazy. Okay, people do not know that Rami Malek didn't sing in Bohemian Rhapsody. Angela Bassett does not sing in What's Love Got to Do with It. Mm-hmm. Okay.
How do people not know that?
I don't know why people don't know these things. Bohemian Rhapsody is not a good movie, but everybody liked that movie, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody other than snooty people like us.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. It does not matter. Just dub the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my rant. Thank you.
Chadwick didn't sing in Get On Up, did he?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I think sometimes in those, you get those where they sing on set, like they actually sing,
right.
Or then sometimes they'll like dub in some of, they'll blend their voices with
Very rare for them to sing on set and that be the final thing. Like that was a big deal with the Tom Hooper Les Mis. That was, they were like, they're really singing.
But I think also they'll sing for, I forget what movie it was, but I did read somewhere where someone sang, went in the booth, laid down, and then they blended their voice with the real person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing. But yeah, I don't know about Chadwick or not. And finally, so I would recommend Spirited if you don't, you don't mind.
The TikTok where Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds sing Grace Kelly together is one of my favorite musical moments. So I'll show you when we're done.
And finally, I saw We Need to Do Something.
I don't need to know what that is.
I do. What is it?
No. I was playing off the title. I don't know what that is.
Pat Healy is the big name. And also, coincidentally, the
Pat
one...
Pat Healy is a big name?
Is the big name in this. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the woman who was the sex worker in Eyes Wide Shut is the mom.
Vanessa Shaw.
Yes. She's the mom in this one.
Interesting.
So this, it's a tornado that's happening and this family of four are in there. They go in their bathroom to hunker down.
Is this on a streaming service right now? Yeah. I feel like I scrolled past it and it started playing and I was like,
I think it's Hulu. Yeah.
Oh, so, okay.
So it's during a tornado, they hunker down in their bathroom and then like the tornado hits and knocks a tree in their house, which locks them in the bathroom.
No. Nope.
And so they're trapped in the bathroom for 4 or 5 days.
No. Nope.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. No, thank you.
Had it just been that alone, that would have been fine. But then they like weave in some stupid shit about the girl thinking she's a witch and that she caused all this.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, like, you know, I am here for movies that are in one location and they can be done properly.
Oh, yeah.
But they fucked this up. They should have stayed in the one location. They should have left out the Wiccan aspect of it and that she's the one who caused all this and, you know, just done something else, because that's enough of a drama and tragedy and traumatic incident for a family of four to be stuck in a bathroom together for 4 or 5 days. And like already going in, mom and dad were like arguing, like mom was cheating on him and dad's an alcoholic. And so like they tried too much. So I would not recommend that.
Okay.
The only thing really recommendable is like X and Spirited. Oh, and Christmas With You.
Because Christmas is nice. You watch Christmas movies like Eyes Wide Shut. And also, like, Whatever We Draw Now. You heard us complain about our Christmas list last week, so we won't rehash that. I will just remind you, there is one and only one Christmas is canceled selection here, where we will give up and draw from the regular list. It's not that. We are on the Christmas list, and we are on Die Hard 2.
Okay.
I've never seen it.
I didn't. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it either.
Temper your expectations.
Isn't this the one with Jeremy Irons?
No, that's Die Hard with a Vengeance. Oh. Yeah.
How many of them are there? Great.
Five?
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I think there might be six. So there's definitely Die Hard. Then there's Die Hard 2, Die Harder, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Live Free or Die Hard, A Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's Timothy Oliphant is in one of those.
That's Live Free or Die Hard, also known as Die Hard 4.0 in places that don't know what Live Free or Die means.
Who's the bad guy in this one?
Oh, the guy who plays Death in Bill and Ted's Excellent or Bogus Journey. William Sadler, something like that.
Oh, that guy.
He's the chief villain of this film.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of weight for him.
It is a Christmas movie. It is.
Oh yeah, full on Christmas. Yeah.
This guy just has really bad luck with the holiday season. All right then. Well, I'm eager to see it. I think I've seen the new. At least one of the new ones was out when I was a movie critic, right?
Correct.
So I think I've seen that one, and of course the original many, many times. Here are some of the movies I'm glad we didn't draw. The Christmas Carol from 2009 with creepy motion capture. The Grinch from 2018, the animated one voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch. Home Alone 2, would watch it. Trump's in it. It's difficult. New Year's Eve, that movie's terrible. Santa Claus 2. Shazam. I like Shazam. I just don't need to. So Die Hard 2 is better than all of those potential results.
I feel like this is a good result. Also, I own it. So
there you go.
Look at you.
Before we get to that, Eyes Wide Shut, summer of 99, July 16th, 1999. What was?
July 16th, by the way, is my wedding anniversary. So it's very funny for me to think that this is 12 years after this movie came out. I would be locking myself down.
Wow.
You would be saying goodbye to weird masked orgies. Or not. You know, they were married.
Oh,
I mean,
the other thing I wanted to say about Eyes Wide Shut, I'm sorry, I know this episode's over.
And we're back. We're back to Eyes Wide Shut chat.
This is one of the many, many movies where I'm like, just be polyamorous.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, seriously. Like, clearly, that's where you guys' heart lives. Like, just
go do that. Okay, anyway.
No
summer
scrubs.
Summer
of 99. TLC, no scrubs.
No. You're close? No, you're close.
Close as in the genre?
Destiny's Child?
Bills.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Yes.
Close as in you wouldn't program these two next to each other on the radio because you would be like, didn't I just? Oh, no, that was... There was a baton being handed off from TLC to Destiny's Child that summer.